Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
An Erio's original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the Turpin family House of Horrors. Here's what you need to know. Minutes before sunrise on a chilly January night in 2018, a young girl climbed out of a window in her family's Paris, California home and ran down the quiet neighborhood street, clutching a cell phone. After gaining enough distance from the house, the girl frantically dialed 911, breathlessly telling the dispatcher,
I just ran away from home. Because I live in a family of 15, and we have abusing parents. Did you hear that?
Okay, how did they abuse you?
Okay, they hit us, throw us across the room, they pull our hair, they yank out our hair. My two little sisters right now are chained up.
Okay, how old are you?
I'm 17.
What's your name?
Golden Turpin.
What's your address?
David and Louise Turpin met in high school in Virginia and married soon after in 1985 when David was 23 and Louise was 16. Throughout the 90s, Louise gave birth to 7 children while David earned a 6-figure salary at his highly specialized engineering job in Fort Worth, Texas. The oldest child, Jennifer, began attending Meadow Creek Elementary, but she would be the only sibling to attend public school. David and Louise often gambled their money away, and in 1998, they filed for bankruptcy, and the bank foreclosed on their home. The family moved to Rio Vista, Texas, a town with a population under 800. It was the perfect place to allow abuse to go unnoticed. Early on, Louise and David began whipping their children with the leather end of David's belt before using a wooden paddle or an oar. when they weren't chained to their beds as punishment, the children were fed very little food on a schedule. David and Louise would taunt their kids by leaving pumpkin pies on the counter, but refusing to let the malnourished children eat them. The siblings were forced to sleep all day and stay up at night, typically going to sleep at 4 or 5 a.m. None of them were allowed to shower more than once a year. If they washed their hands above their wrists, they would be chained up as punishment for playing with water. In May 2004, the Turpins purchased a mobile home for their property. By 2006, Louise and David moved their 12 children into the trailer since their house was uninhabitable, and the couple abandoned the 10 oldest children for 4 years, moving into an apartment 40 miles away. Every few days, David would arrive at the trailer to drop off frozen food. Louise never visited. The two oldest siblings, Joshua and Jennifer, were tasked with locking their siblings in cages should they break their parents' rules. The family moved to California in 2010, first to Murrieta, also in Riverside County, and then, in 2014, to Paris, California. All the children were homeschooled by the parents, who had opened Sandcastle Day School, with David listed as the principal. The siblings, some now in their 20s, had been planning an escape for several years, but they firmly believed their parents would kill them if the plan was not successful. Realizing her siblings might die under her parents' increasingly severe abuse, Jordan made her escape plan a reality. On January 14, 2018, the police answered Jordan Turpin's call. She was 17 years old, but she was so frail that they assumed she was only 10. Jordan did her best to describe her situation and that she and her sister had been planning an escape for over 2 years, although she did not seem to know basic words such as medication or pills. She had a makeshift map of her street drawn on a piece of paper, as well as a photo on the cell phone of one of her siblings chained to their bed. And because of this evidence, the officers could enter the home without a warrant. When police arrived at the house Sunday, they found a house of horrors. The carpets were caked with grime and feces, there were stains on the walls, and one of the siblings was still shackled to their bed. The 13 Turpin children, ranging from ages 2 to 29, and severely malnourished, were removed from the house. And the parents, David and Louise Turpin, were promptly arrested. Fun facts, aka death stats. David and Louise Turpin were charged with 13 counts of torture, 7 counts of abuse on a dependent adult, 12 counts of false imprisonment, and 6 counts of child abuse. After initially pleading not guilty on February 22, 2019, the Turpin parents each entered guilty pleas on 14 felony counts, including 1 count of torture. They were both sentenced to life imprisonment with the possibility of parole in 25 years. According to Jeff Moore, attorney for Louise Turpin, 10 of the Turpin children have 10-year restraining orders against their parents. 2 have 5-year restraining orders, and 1 had the restraining order dropped. Today we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And our very special guest today is host of Gee Thanks, Just Bought It, Caroline Moss.
Hi.
So Caroline, can you give our listeners a little recap or a little,
synopsis?
I was going to say, I'm trying to think of like, you know, like a hot couple sentences.
A sizzle hot take.
Sizzle.
Hot,
like hot my elevator pitch,
yes.
My Shark Tank pitch.
Yes.
Perfect.
Of Gee Thanks Just Bought It or myself.
Anything no, you want.
What do you want to sell us?
Whatever.
Well, let me tell you about this mute button. Okay, so Gee Thanks Just Bought It was started on Black Friday 2019. It was sort of a response to looking at Amazon reviews or looking at reviews in general and really not knowing if I could trust them just because, like, I don't know, those people who are these people leaving the reviews. I wanted to build a community of people who are like, not necessarily wire cutter style. Like, I don't care about the best thing. I want to know like who you are and what you use this thing for, and then maybe I relate to it and maybe I'll know if that thing will work for me. So every week on Fridays I invite a guest, usually a friend of mine or someone, or my husband. Honestly, sometimes I rope him into the conversation and we talk about, like, you know, what we bought that week that we love and where you can get it. And it's not just Amazon related. It can range from clothing to shoes to a washing machine. My only requirement is that the guest comes on the show and is like super excited to evangelize whatever product this is. So it doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't even have to be aspirational. One of our funnest, most listened to episodes, the guest brought a drain plug that helps keep the bath water higher. And it's like, you know, that's not the stuff you're looking to like influencers for. You know, this isn't like the barefoot dreams, you know, blanket, but like it's fun and everyone goes shopping. And especially during the pandemic, I think a lot of people were like only online shopping.
That's right.
Like, what else was there to do? So it's a fun conversation about like how and where and why we spend our money and what we spend our money on. And it's a fun community. And I've had a great time doing it for the last 2 years.
I love it.
I'd like to offer you $50,000 for 15% of your company.
Mm-hmm. How about $6 million for 1%, Chris?
Deal.
That's called negotiating.
That is really good negotiating.
Wow. Great negotiating. Chris, and I can't wait to see where Chris is getting these funds.
I can't wait. That'll be fun.
I'll just
wire me the money.
Yeah, yeah, I'll set up the transfer.
I have to liquidate some offshore assets, but
that's
we have
fine.
A deal.
I have time. That's great. That's excellent.
Well, while Chris is liquidating, Caroline, we'd like to start off the show by asking our guest, what is something that is recently alarming you? What is something that's keeping you up at night?
That is such a good question, Rebecca. I would have to say what is alarming me, because this all happened last night, as we're recording last night, is Russia's invasion of Ukraine and thus starting a war.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yes, to say I am alarmed is probably an understatement. If we want to go in a more, I don't know, fluffy direction, I did watch the Tinder Swindler a few weeks ago on Netflix and found myself victim blaming. So that my own behavior was alarming me there. But I found that documentary to be like so hand-wringy. So we have a spectrum of things that are alarming me, but it's 2022. Like, you know, it could be anything.
Name your alarm. That's right.
Exactly.
It's good to have options, you know.
Right.
Always.
Right.
And fluffy alarms. That's too, we don't always have the super serious alarms. We can have fluff alarms.
Yeah, sure. I'm a victim blamer for Netflix documentaries. There's a fluff alarm.
There you go.
Alarmed. I'll have to take that to therapy next week. That's what's going to happen.
Definitely alarming, the whole situation. I don't know when listeners are going to be listening to this, but that's the state we're in
this. Hopefully by the time the podcast comes out.
Everything is resolved.
Yeah, they'll have resolved.
That's
everything.
Right.
Yeah, that it's been going in that direction.
Hopefully.
Hopefully,
and most likely, I guess. Also.
Yeah. History shows that's usually how
how long it takes.
That's good.
So,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, just going to take this opportunity to transition us into this horrific tragedy. Speaking of, you know, big tragedies, you know, start discussing, you know, what happened within this family and how this could have happened. I mean, I know, Caroline, you watched the 2020 documentary or episode or whatever we want to call it. But, it's just horrific when you see this body camera and you see the it's Jordan Turpin, who is clearly escaping, you know, she's terrified for her life. She's never spoken to a person in her entire life. As she's talking to the 911 operator,
right,
she's saying, you're the first person I've ever talked to. Oh, it's the first time I've been outside.
And you can hear it in her, you know, there's a cadence that she has and a way that she pronounces words that it just, you can tell there's like a lack of exposure interaction socially.
Right.
Yes. She doesn't know what medication is. She doesn't know pills even. I don't think she understood what a pill was. Mm.
She didn't know her address. That was really, it's really haunting to hear that, correspondence sort of play out.
Right. Yeah. I mean, she called 911, but like had no knowledge or, you know, education around like what information you would have to give to a 911 operator. Like that was so sad. Like just the basic stuff that when you're little, they drill into your head. This is your address. This is your phone number. Mm-hmm. Like this, these are your parents' names. This is your, like, she couldn't answer any of that. And it was stressing me out because of course they're kind of on the other line being like, is this a prank?
Right.
Like, is this a scam? Is this, you know, and that was like, no. It was horrible to watch. It was horrible.
And the officer kind of took that tack too, where he said, you know, you could tell when he was talking to her, the body cam footage showed him and them talking. And he asked if she took medication, like you guys were saying. And clearly you're thinking he thinks she's on drugs.
Right.
And that is just so nerve wracking because if she didn't, I guess, have that evidence, and we're sort of, I don't know how we want to structure this discussion, but that evidence was very key in order to convince him of what she was talking about.
Right. The thought of like having the forethought to take a picture.
Yeah.
To be able to show him like, I may sound a little crazy. I have some awareness that like this is weird. I may be coming off weird, but like, here's a picture. You can't deny that.
And to Caroline's point, you know, that she didn't know basic things that we drill into, you know, kids, like your address, she was 17. So that is another layer of how deep and the level of abuse that they were experiencing in this house. So I feel like we should start off by putting the parents up on the board.
Sure.
Feels right.
What do you think?
Feels right.
David Turpin and Louise Turpin. This is according to a Time article in 2018. According to the National Child Abuse and Neglect Data System, 71.8% of child abuse or neglect cases occurred at the hands of victims' parents in 2015, the most recent year for which numbers are available. In my experience, there's usually a psychopathology, in the parents, says trauma psychologist Priscilla Das Brailsford, an adjunct professor in the Department of Psychiatry at Georgetown University. They're depressed, perhaps. They're bipolar. They're schizophrenic. Some of the parents themselves might have been abused as children, though I say it warily because it's not an excuse to abuse your own children. David Finkelhor, a professor of sociology, said he sees two other diagnostic profiles that might fit the parents. Delusional or paranoid states, which can lead to all manner of irritation or abusive behavior. A misguided ideology might be another factor. Parents may tell themselves they're protecting their children from the corruption of an awful society, or that children are evil and need to be chastised or brought into line. One additional factor for either or both parents might be a state that Elizabeth Scowron, a professor of counseling psychology, calls extreme threat sensitivity, often seen in highly abusive parents. They view the world through a lens of things that are threatening, that my child is more powerful than me, she says. If I am in complete control, then I can calm down.
So it
almost feels like a lot of these could have been factors in this particular case.
Plenty of people have had trauma in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And plenty of people, of course, act out on that trauma or project that trauma onto others. This level of abuse is escalated beyond comprehension.
Right.
So it's like you can blame the trauma cycle, because I feel like not putting that, you know, the parents of the parents or like whatever, you know, abuse they endured as children up on the board, we would be like missing like a huge component of how these, how the cycle actually works. But it's also like, this is not someone who like pushes a kid on the playground because their dad hits them at home. Like this is, this like goes like
psychological,
right?
Evil.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Let's, I love what you said. The, let's put the trauma cycle up on the board. Because I think that's a major piece. And that said, right, exactly like you were saying, Caroline, 12 of the 13 Turpin children were shackled, right? Starved, physically abused by their parents in what authorities called a house of horrors. Prosecutors said some of the children were caged or chained most of the day, forced to subsist on peanut butter sandwiches and burritos, made to sleep up to 20 hours a day, and were allowed to shower only once a year. The Turpin children were fed while their parents, they're fed only peanut butter sandwiches, while their parents ate regular portions consisting of fast food and frozen meals. Jennifer, who was the oldest of the 13 children, was often tasked with preparing meals for her parents, meals she wasn't allowed to eat. Jordan recalls feeling so hungry at times that she resorted to eating leaves, grass, or ketchup poured over ice cubes.
Jesus. You know, this one is so, this one is really sad and particularly haunting, I think, for a lot of people, myself included. I think because I'm trying to rationalize why. I think it's because when you're a kid, you're just so reliant on your parent or the parental figure in your life. There's so much innocence there. You really, literally, you can't look after yourself. So you're just reliant on somebody else and their judgment and their psychosis and their being
and their authority too. It's like you just defer to your parents. You would, you know, you don't think to cross your parents until
the world gets filtered through them. And I just think that that's a very I mean, look, I don't know, it's just that just allows for this kind of thing to happen, which is just so sad. I don't know what you'd call that, or how we could sort of alarmist put it up on the board, but maybe like I don't even know. Because what do you call that? It's not like you're not. It's just like we don't have. I don't know. Okay, so like say for example in like a commune, there is more than one authority figure, right? We're broken off into family units. That's the smallest sort of unit of society measurement, right? So yes. I don't know if what I'm saying is like, is that flawed?
Just the fact just that like the people, bad luck.
You want to put family up on the board?
Mental health.
The family unit.
The family unit.
Being a unit.
Know. No, I mean, I get it. But it's like so far, like, I mean, I can only say repeat what I said, like so far beyond comprehension. Right. I'm also just thinking about how I know that, you know, Jennifer at one point had gone to public school. Like she was the only one that they said had attended public school. And then the rest of their kids, they pulled from this. Like these kids didn't even exist. Like people didn't even know I don't know. Like, were they born in hospitals? Like, were they born at home? Like, do these kids, are there records of their existence? I mean, like the system, you know, because ideally, you shouldn't be able to birth upwards of a dozen children and be able to, it's almost like, it's like a sick game. It reaches beyond, I think, like even the textbook definition of like parental abuse, you know, they wouldn't let them shower more than once a year, and they would get in trouble if they washed their hands above their wrists.
Yeah.
Like they would leave food out on the counter that the kids couldn't eat, but they could smell and they could see. Like, it's like sick.
And the level of abuse that Jennifer, the oldest, endured, not only was it 29 years, I mean, that is a long time to live with that kind of psychological, physical, everything kind of abuse. But how they put her in a position where she then had to abuse her younger children, where she was the one who was ordered to lock them up in cages when they abandoned them when they were living in a trailer and would only show up once a week to leave food. I mean, that is also like another level of like wanting. It was like they wanted to create that cycle of trauma. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, for sure.
So I have two thoughts. Just talking about the way that they were treating these kids, and even then, Rebecca, to your latest point, making the oldest daughter treat her siblings that way, to me, it kind of like rings the bell of like extreme control issues, like them having to like really kind of micromanage. And again, it's like so deeply, there's so many like psychological stuff, but it seems to be there's a lot of like, they control every little ounce of their existence and even the way they're treating each other. And another thing I wanted to bring up to what Caroline was saying, which when I was watching the 2020 episode, I was thinking the whole time, like, why is there no one in the public school system checking in on this? Like, you know, it should be required that if you're going to homeschool your kids, you got to like show up to some kind of public function every so often to be like, here's my kids. They're still alive. I'm still teaching them, and give people from the outside a chance to, I mean, I don't know if that'll solve it, because they did go out sometimes and they like showered them for the occasion, but it just feels like there's got to be a system of checks and balances.
Well, the system is like extreme. There is in theory, like a system, right, that exists in this country. And of course, like all of our other major systems, it's like it's either broken or it's like designed not to work.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of you are like Law and Order SVU fans, but there was a really great episode. Okay, we dabble. Good, good, good. I'm a scholar.
PhD.
PhD. But there was an episode and Whoopi Goldberg was the guest star. And you know, when someone that big is the guest star, like they're the murderer, like you just know it. And but she was in charge. She was a social worker and she was like in charge of other social workers. And the crime was that essentially a child who was on the list of, you know, children who needed to be checked on at certain times had died and the because of neglect and the entire episode was like, you know, who do we blame? Like literally the entire episode was an episode of The Alarm.
We should watch it.
And yeah, it's really good. And you know, what they focus on is that like there are so many levels of you know, neglect to make a child, and it happens more than you think, but it was like, you know, the system is like, we give one social worker 95 children.
Right.
And we hold this person to an impossible standard of like, why don't we have more social workers? Why don't we have a system to relieve that? You know what I mean? And so this guy in the episode was like, you know, forging his paperwork because he needed to keep his job. And it's like, no one is right, but also no one is wrong. And it's, and there, and the problems go up and up and up and up.
Two things off of what you're saying.
Right.
I think we should put a system made to fail up on the board. And I also, since we're on the topic, think we should do homeschooling regulation, put that up on the board. And this is according to CNN, David Turpin listed himself as administrator and principal of a private school operated out of his home. He gave it an inviting name, Sandcastle Day School. The engineer started the school by simply filling out a Department of Education affidavit stating that his children were attending full time. Nothing more was required in California, and the state has no authority to monitor or inspect the school. NBC said no state agency regulates or oversees private schools in California. Private schools. The California Department of Education said in a statement this week that it is sickened by this tragedy, but the department does not approve, monitor, inspect, or oversee private schools, but would gladly work to change the laws. Private schools are subject to an annual inspection by the state or local fire marshal, but the Turpins never alerted Paris city officials they were operating one at their home, Fire Marshal Dave Martinez said. It's a home school, so it's not licensed, he said. If it was a licensed facility, it would trigger our inspections. Scott Rourke, a spokesman for California Department of Education. So like people are all like kind of
loopholes.
Like
so there's little
and defending themselves. Essentially, they're like, well, there wasn't a license. So as a fire marshal, I didn't have to go check in, which fair, but
yeah, I mean, fire marshals don't just go into homes. So that makes sense to me. But I think what Clayton is saying, and I think maybe what we can put up on the board is gaps in the system. This to me is a gap, you know, right? Where you can, or a loophole, Clayton put. Yeah.
It just seems like it's impossible to disappear in our world today, right? Like they track everything. You cannot disappear in the world. But how did 13 kids just essentially disappear for 29, the oldest, for 29 years?
And I think also because the school, okay, so he's got this fake school set up. And the oldest went to school for 3 years. So I don't know how much we can blame the actual school system, but I think that there's blame to be shed on community members, right? So let's say neighbors or,
yeah,
I don't know how to put this exactly.
I have neighbors as something we can put up on the board. But I do want to just keep talking for 1 second, continue on here and say, you know, this is according to CNN. Rachel Coleman, executive director of the Massachusetts Bates Coalition for Responsible Home Education, said the coalition has recommended that states require homeschooled children to meet with mandatory reporters such as doctors and certified teachers. The nonprofit has also advocated routine checks for criminal records and cases involving child protective services. The organization has cataloged nearly 400 cases, most since 2000, involving severe to fatal abuse of what it calls homeschooling's invisible children. There are kids out there right now, I guarantee you, who are currently chained to their beds, she said. I can say that because these cases keep coming up.
Mm. You know, I think going to what Caroline was saying earlier about the episode where it just feels like this is a problem with like lack of funding for education, right? Like it seems great to have a mandatory reporter or a doctor meeting these kids, but then it's like, well, do we have enough of those and how do we fund that? Like there should just be money thrown into all sorts of education from the ground up.
Well, I just want to say, because it's also happening in the news right now, the flip side of that is, you know, what's happening in Texas, which is that Greg Abbott wants people, you know, citizens arrest to report any trans kids they see. Mm-hmm. And he wants to sic child protective services on trans kids and parents of trans kids for, you know, because he believes that is a form of allowing your child to, present as whatever gender they want to present as a form of child abuse. Mm-hmm. So it's like, there is a really thin line of like, how much power do we want an already corrupt government to have over individuals? And then there's also the problem on the other end of the spectrum of rugged individualism in America, which is that like no one wants to take care of each other. Like it's a really, really, really thin line. And then the privilege also of the Turpin family all the Turpin children being white, and what would have happened if a 14-year-old, you know, black teenager escaped and pulled, you know, and did that whole 9-1-1, what would have happened there? Like, there's just so much there that like every way you turn to try to find a moment where this scenario could have been prevented, you're met with, I agree. Like for a case like this, if there are kids out there living like this, yeah, I want more interception, but I also don't trust the people intercepting because like, so I don't know. It's really difficult to say. Mm. Like it's almost like you have to hope that you get lucky with a parent that doesn't abuse you with white skin, with, you know, a rich family, or else you're like really screwed.
Yeah. And I think to Chris, maybe this was I think this might've been the point you were going to make earlier, but community, right? How that like sense of responsibility towards our own community and protecting one another and caring for one another, making sure everyone is okay. It's like, I know it sounds like I'm trying to talk about a utopia, right? But I still think even with its problems, and we can get closer to something where we see these red flags and see these alarms.
Yeah. Well, to Caroline's point, you know, even that can get cloudy, because I guess what you're talking about is like a community, but that community, the implication is that they have a sort of consistent moral code, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And where you go off is, well, this country was founded on the principles of freedom, right? Freedom of religion, freedom of speech, etc. And so we say to people boldly in our first, you know, in our whatever First Amendment or whatever, we're basically saying, you can think whatever you want. And so when we go there, you know, it opens up for people to believe any number of things or be confused by any number of changes or events that they see in society. And so that what they think might be protecting a fellow community member is actually impinging on their rights or their beliefs, or like if they, like Caroline was saying, if a person feels that they were born in the wrong body, you know, somebody can come up and say, well, that goes against, you know, God or whatever. And they can sort of use that, you know, that sort of community outreach as an overreach, and
right.
to say, you know, no, you don't believe that. This is child abuse by your parents. So it's
right. I mean, there was the tip line, you know, for like who's getting an abortion, like right. late in 2021. It's like, if you call this phone number, if you believe that you know someone who got an abortion
wow.
or who performed an abortion. I mean, and there are also kids, you know, it's like, it's exactly right, Chris, which is like, in order for the community thing to really help, because I actually believe it would hurt more than help, because I think we've seen it hurt more than
right.
help. It's like we would all need to have a baseline belief system. Mm. And it's like right. what might be a red flag to someone. It's like, I know a problem with child protective services, because I have friends who do like fostering. And so they are very much like in touch with the system, because the system has to come and check on them. Like, they are always so terrified if their foster child is, you know, throwing a tantrum like any other child.
Right.
Right.
Because kids are kids.
Right. Right.
But you know, that could be a red flag to someone. Right. Like, people get reported for, I don't know, like food policing is such a mm-hmm. thing right now. It's like, if a child is seeing, oh, what was that? I heard it on Maintenance Pod. And there was a family in the UK who essentially, kids were taken away from, I'll have to send the article so I know I can get this right, but like, they were taken away from their parents essentially because the children were considered fat. And it was like, oh, the parents are like abusing them by like not keeping them healthy, which right. is like, there's so many things wrong with that.
Right.
And like, they're right. like, by all other accounts, these kids are like wonderful and happy and like well-adjusted, but like their parents are not making them, their parents are like ruining them because they're getting fed, you know, quote unquote junk food. So it's like, okay, like I would like to think that if I lived next door to the Turpin family, you know, would I have sensed something was
right,
wrong?
Right.
But by all accounts, didn't a neighbor on the 2020 thing say like there was no movement in the house during
right.
the day? Mm-hmm. And it turned out that they had kept the kids sort of like asleep all day
right.
and awake all night. So
yeah.
it was like, this was like a calculated effort
yeah.
right.
to make sure no one knew what was going on.
Right.
And it's like,
yeah, go on, Clayton. But I just want to put it up, lack of a moral code,
sure.
lack of a moral base code, something like that.
You're saying society's
just like something we like can all agree on. Just
well,
one
that's
thing.
What I was going to say yeah. is I'm listening to all of this and it's like my instinct is to be like, okay, well, we just need as individuals more engagement. Like, we do need to lean into our communities and make sure that we're taking care of each other and looking out. But to Caroline's point, it's like, you don't know what that means. In my eyes, the bad actors might feel the same way. Like, right, I need to be more engaged in my community too and make sure that I am policing people's gender or sexuality or whatever it is. It's kind of like this weird dystopian, like Kafka-esque 1984 moment where you're like, what is, you know, war is peace kind of situation. It's like, how do you this is going to happen, right? It's all, this is going to continue to happen because people are inherently bad.
I feel like we could, oh, go ahead.
No, Rebecca. No. I was just going to say it feels like it comes from fear, but because if we knew each other a little bit better and understood each other a little bit better, perhaps, you know, we would be more kind and understanding. And that fear is just like, oh, this is different than me. I don't understand it. I don't like it. That's wrong.
What if we put rugged individualism up on the board?
Sure.
Because that's the idea of like, I stay in my lane.
Yes.
You know,
I like that.
If this isn't happening to me, I'm not going to stick my nose into someone else's business. Because honestly, like my reaction to like, you know, abortion tip lines and like sending, you know, child protective services on trans kids is like F off. I would say that my mentality on that contributes to a problem, and that like, because I hate so much about what we do report that I am not really comfortable reporting anything for fear of being wrong.
Interesting.
And for fear of maybe getting someone in trouble who doesn't deserve it. So I think that because that's what's been instilled in me. So it's like, I think up on the board could be this idea of we all just sort of like keep to ourselves, like we're head down, you know,
the American
way. We don't
want
anyone to get in our way. Yeah, exactly. We don't get in anyone else's way. No one should get in our way. Like you live, you do you, I do me, all good. And I think that's a problem.
I also think we got to put up Clayton's, Clayton finished his point by saying, man is inherently evil.
No, that's good. Yeah.
We are struggling every day to murder each other, right? Like, I just feel like we have evolved and made things very comfortable for ourselves so that we can all kind of be copacetic together. But I just feel like it only takes one little thing to go wrong. You see people killing each other over a parking space in a grocery store. Like, that's in us. That's human.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I mean, one guy over in Russia decided he wanted to wage a war against a country and just like started bombing the hell out of it.
I do feel like the Russian invasion into Ukraine is sort of a cloud, not a cloud. It's just very present in this podcast.
Yeah,
I feel that kind of energy of just concern.
Which
I feel I'm very concerned. Yeah. I mean, it's legitimately concerning.
I think, I know that time is running out. So before it does, I want to put up the Bible. Because it is an aspect
organized religion.
Yeah.
For sure.
In an interview for People magazine, the women shared that their father used belts, sticks, dog kennels, and homemade cages as tools for punishment, in addition to chaining children to their beds and pulling on their hair when they misbehaved. They literally used the Bible to explain their behavior to us, Jennifer said. They love to point out things in Deuteronomy, saying that we have the right to do this to you, that they even had the right to kill us if we didn't listen. So it looked, I know that they were, I believe they were Pentecostal, right? But just the use of the Bible as an excuse to just say that what they're doing is right and to convince the kids that they deserved it, essentially, because as a kid, you know, when you grow up religious, the Bible, if someone says, oh, it's in the Bible, well, you just believe it, right?
You know, I want to put this in there because I think people use the Bible a lot to justify like really hateful things.
Yeah.
And just to make a clarification, because I feel like there are some people who are super religious and they use it for really wonderful purposes.
Yeah.
And I know that's not what you're saying, but my friend, I have a friend who likes to distinguish between you know, like Christians, for example, are what he calls garbage Christianity, which is the Christians, quote unquote, who are picking and choosing the most random things, or not even like, they just like probably heard it from somebody else. And so they're saying the Bible says X, so therefore I get to do Y.
Right.
It's just not rooted in anything spiritual.
Yes.
Right.
So it's like, you know, this idea that I can point to this Bible, which is like the ultimate moral code.
Right.
And I am exonerated in all of my actions and thoughts.
Well,
like anyone could do that. That's such a cop out.
Religious. That's called religious extremism, I think, is what that is, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it's like, you know, the majority religion in our country is, mm-hmm. so it becomes relative. But like, yeah, there's, I mean, everything that like is so hateful and so polarizing, I think a lot of people always fall back on like, well, it's my religion. I mean, we saw that in the pandemic too. Right. Like, I can't get the vaccine. Like God said, I couldn't do it. And it's like, well, how are, like, and because of our immense like freedom of religion in this country, it's like, how can you tell somebody like, oh, well, you know, but like, it's like, you're really, your God didn't say you can't get the vaccine.
So where?
maybe to put a finer point on it, maybe it's a religion as a justification.
Yeah.
Like it's
using religion to justify mm-hmm. evil things.
I mean, I think those yeah. are two, but let's distinguish those on the blame board, Clay. Maybe it's the Bible is one, right? Maybe we just go after the big guy, see if we can take it
sure.
down. And then another one is religious justification for immoral behavior.
Mm-hmm. That feels right. Because again, I there's also like something about it that's like when you take an excerpt versus when you look at the whole picture, right?
Yeah, yeah. So
it's like because that's not picking. What the Bible is saying.
Cherry picking religious mm-hmm. mandate.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So do we have anything else we want to throw up before we start knocking things off?
We got the parents up there, right?
Yeah.
Double check.
Okay. Well, let's take a quick break and then we'll start knocking things off the board.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay, who's to blame for the Turpin family house of horrors? David and Louise Turpin. The trauma cycle. A system made to fail. Homeschool regulation. Loopholes in the system. Education and public safety. Neighbors. Community or lack thereof. Lack of moral code. Rugged individualism, the Bible, or religious justification for immoral behavior.
What a list.
That's a heavy list.
Heavy. This is a happy episode.
Heavy episode. Like, usually we at least have one that you're like, all right, well, we didn't really want to put that one up on the board.
Just to get things started, I think, and Caroline was alluding to this earlier, I think that we can take off neighbors and community right now just because we, A, don't have enough evidence that they saw something that could have been, you know, set off an alarm or whatever. Yeah. But also, B,
you know, if I were in that, like, I, you know, respect my neighbor's privacy. And if I were in their position, I'm not sure I would have noticed anything. Or maybe you do, but then you sort of, I don't know.
You need harder evidence. You call, there's not like, you're not right to blame.
The systems in place are also like not actually meant to help. So if you were to call, if you had like a legitimate concern about something happening, like there is a reason why a lot of people in this country like do not feel comfortable calling 911 because right. like, historically it's like people don't show up to actually help you. And so I think you can get rid of the neighbors and community because it's like, that is a symptom of like a much larger problem, which is that we don't have resources or, infrastructure in place to actually deal with the problems that we're seeing. We literally just call cops to deal with everything. It's like if there was actually like services we could call, if there were actually like trained professionals that we could call, that would be different. But I think right now it's like you see something that like is a little off-putting, you would just have to jump to like call the cops and then the cops show up.
Yeah, if only we like knew other things, other numbers to call the 911, like 2424, like when you see, I don't know, something that it might involve a child or, you know.
I think that's child services. There is a number for that.
Is there?
Yes.
But that, but that's,
but we don't know it.
Cops.
Yeah.
It's right.
Still,
is it?
It's still, yeah, it's still, it is still
a wellness check. Yeah.
It's still like a wellness check that's like, that's like, you know, if you are Black, if you're a person of color, if you are poor, you're reported into a system. I mean, it's just like, you know, I think what people were advocating for is like, what about, you know, a robust, well financially supported, like, you know, mental health service? You hear all these things like people getting shot, like mentally unwell people being like shot by cops. Because someone called and was like, hey, my neighbor like seems to be like
having a crisis.
Acting weird. Yeah.
Having a crisis like in the front yard or like, you know, and then all of a sudden you're reading headlines that's like, you know, autistic man shot by police because someone called the cops. It's like, I don't want to be the person to call 911.
Right.
Like, how do we get this person this help? And I mean, child services is essentially like just cops. It really is. I think they do more harm than good. And so I wish we had like a better, we need like, I think the ideal that we're all imagining exists, but it just doesn't.
Even in the episode too, the 2020 episode, there's such a high bar for the police officers to show up and have to actually take action. You know, like remember how the parents were kind of weirdly hiding that door off to the side where the one kid was chained up and they walked through the back of the house for a while before they.
Yeah. They had to find the kid in chains in order.
Yeah, and it's like
to have a reason.
Wasn't until they found that.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
That's
and it's like
rough.
There's a world in which they miss that bedroom, and they're like, okay, well, these kids are living in filth, but like, there's only so much we can do, you know.
And if they don't have a warrant, they're like, hey, are any kids chained up here? And the parents are like, nope.
No.
And they're like, okay, thanks.
Yeah.
And so, they've literally done their job. I mean, it's like that's the craziest part.
I feel like we can fold homeschool regulation into loopholes in the system.
Okay.
Yeah.
And a system made to fail.
Yeah, I feel like a system made to fail could be like the big overarching umbrella.
Yes, exactly.
Of those two.
Uh-huh.
So loopholes is also folded into a system made to fail?
I think so.
Okay.
And I think instead of the Bible, because we're not anti-religion here, you know, again, the overarching message of the Bible is not to,
it's love.
Exactly. It's not to abuse your children. Right. So it's the religious justification of for immoral behavior that we're really after here.
I think the trauma cycle, is maybe an explanation of why these things happen, but I don't think you can blame. That's like victim blaming, right? We can't blame the
trauma cycle.
Yeah,
honestly, that folds into the parents.
The parents, and honestly, so does religious justification for immoral.
That's
behavior.
True. Because that was like, just a technique.
That's their whole thing.
Yeah. Now we're left with.
So you actually have like three good sort of columns here. You have the parents, you have the system, and you have the people, like the us, the rugged individualism, the lack of a moral code.
Maybe we fold a lack of a moral code into rugged individualism.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because we are not told to have like a community minded focus on anything. It's like we believe what we want to believe, we do what we want to do, it's all good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, so off of these three, I mean, I'm gonna blame the parents. I have to. I think
you do
for this one.
I have a suggestion.
Okay.
Here's where what I'm thinking. I think it's going to be hard for me to A, blame rugged individualism or just living in a liberal society only because, well, it's where, I don't know, it just seems a little broad. And the system to me, the only problem with that it was the system, I mean, and if we're talking about a system, we're talking about protective services like the police and like community. And it was that sort of got them out of this trouble.
Right. And this case, it didn't fail. Well, it did fail for a long time.
It mm-hmm. There was an absence, but when they intervened, and credit to that cop for intervening in the way he did, yes. And the system, you know, it worked. So to me, it just comes, I know we're talking about degrees here because it was a long time where there was this gap and so these parents were allowed to abuse
and was
these
it just luck
so
that it worked in the end
maybe but anyway to me also the it's so insidious that the, mm-hmm. that you know it was two people collaborating like the parents right. collaborating. It wasn't just the psychosis of one individual, it was two people collaborating in this horrific torture yeah. scenario that it's almost like I want to put them in jail and slap them too.
I have a question. I have a factual question.
Okay.
Like for me to get to my answer, okay. which is, were either David or Louise Turpin ever arrested or looked at by the police and ultimately let go back to their way. I
do not know the exact answer. I have not seen it in the research. I have not seen that they had any priors.
Okay. Run-in, yeah.
Any run-ins with the law.
Okay, so if they literally were like totally off the grid and they had never...
No record of any kind.
No record, then I have to blame them. I mean, I do blame them. Of course. Mm-hmm. But I would have an easier time blaming the system. I think, you know, Chris, I get it. Like the system can work for some people. We know who it doesn't work for. It's hard to say that this is a thing that works when we know who it doesn't work for. But it's like I would have a harder time blaming just the parents if we found out that like these two were like on someone's like list
right.
and like, oh, they right. knew something was going on, but they just couldn't really do anything about it. Like this seems to be, I mean, the reason why I think this is such a huge story is like, this is so unconscionable. It's like so unheard
And it was like
of.
In our backyards, right? It's happening in California, this liberal state.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And it was like just in a nice suburban. Yeah, exactly. In blue California. Yeah. And I think this is just like too sick. I don't know if you can curse on the show,
yeah.
but
we do. Yeah,
we
yeah.
beep it out.
Just two sick
time.
Fucks. There's no one else to blame. Like, talk about rugged individualism. Like these two are they did it.
Yeah,
like mm-hmm. this. It's gross.
I do like the idea of giving a big slap to rugged individualism, or like the. I mean, there's.
Well, the,
just
because
for what
it promotes,
that stands for.
Yeah, it the, like, promotes the idea that you don't need community.
To me, it's like, you know, we could, yes, so everyone is an individual and you should embrace our individual unique qualities, but to like take it that extra step and to be like, it's like my way or the highway, no matter like no critical thinking involved. It's right. just like whatever stubborn ideas are in your head, that's the law of your land. Like just seems so uncooperative. We live in community. We don't exist alone. We don't live on the planet by ourselves.
I agree. Right. I agree with that. But to me, that is better.
religious justification for more immoral behavior explains what that is, more than rugged individualism. I mean, to me, that what Clayton's talking about is like any idea that can come into your head. Well, that's immoral behavior. And what they said is because we follow this religion, we're allowed to employ this.
The only reason I push back on that is I feel like there is rugged individualism without religion. I don't think everyone is using the Bible to justify their hateful things. Some people are just bad.
In the case of this tragedy, sure. That's exactly what happened.
Well, we're in a pickle, guys, and we're going to have to make a decision. And sometimes you make a call and it might not be the right call. And that's why we continue to think and
that's true, Reeves.
Check on our decisions.
Where are you coming down?
I think that I'm definitely sending the parents to jail. Okay. And my instinct is to, instead of, you know, the system, my instinct is more to slap rugged individualism. Not, and I take your point, Chris, I understand where you're coming from, but I also feel like that concept that we can just do this on our own is promoting something that's not real. I don't think we can all survive on our own without community. That if that was the case, then there would communities wouldn't be so popular.
Let me say it this way too, with regards to rugged individualism. I feel like the reason religion can fold into that is because the Bible or your religious beliefs is a tool that you can use to justify your rugged individualism, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Versus I'm not going to use my religious beliefs to like justify my rugged. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people think also like rugged individualism is this idea of, we heard a lot about it in the beginning of the pandemic. Like, you know, if you don't want to go out and you don't want to catch COVID, don't go out. You can just stay home and not catch COVID. But I want to go to the bar. So I'm going to go to the bar. And then if I catch COVID, like not a big deal. Like there was this idea of like every individual choice that we make is limited to only us. Mm-hmm. And as if our actions don't have any effect on the people around us and the community around us. I don't know that it's not necessarily like always based in religion. It's and it can fall on both sides of like the political spectrum. It can both fall on any side of the moral spectrum. It's just this idea of like, hey, like I'm going to live the way I want to live and you live the way you want to live. And then we kind of come up against that when it's like, you actually can't because it's not just about you. And I think also like rugged individualism is sort of what got David and Louise Turpin to be able to pull this off.
It did. You know? And they changed, you know, they moved locations. They went to remote areas. That had a big part of it. No one was asking. You can homeschool if you want. No one's going to get involved. And I think that really was a big aspect that led to the abuse. Oh. So I'm going to call it rugged individualism. You're getting the big slap. David and Louise Turpin, you're going to the alarmist jail.
I think that's fair.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we did our best.
Yeah, and we had to really work for this.
It's like, how can you not blame the parents? Like, how can you not blame the parents? But it's not just about the parents.
Right.
There's so many other things that like fell by the wayside to allow this to happen.
Mm-hmm. Caroline, thank you so much for joining us today. And
thank you for having me.
Helping us. I mean, we couldn't have done it without you. We really...
I really recommend that Law and Order episode. So I really do.
Don't
thank
say
you for
TV.
Having me. This was
it has never helped you solve.
Yeah,
anything.
Well, I never have said that.
Good. That's good.
Don't
That's
worry.
Good.
Don't worry. I've never said that. No, this was awesome. Thank you guys so much for having me.
In the aftermath of their escape, according to People magazine, after leaving the House of Horrors, the seven Turpin children, who were minors, were placed in foster homes. The six adult children were given a court-appointed public guardian to manage their health care, nutrition, safety, housing, and education. What reportedly followed were a series of new horrors.
in one of the foster homes that several Turpins lived in, children were allegedly abused over an extended period of time. In another home, a foster parent told one of the Turpin girls that she understands why her parents chained her up. The older siblings, who were sent out into high-violence neighborhoods with little to no life skills training, have allegedly been denied basic care from their public guardian. David Scott, an investigative reporter for ABC News, noted that these poor living conditions persisted despite the Turpin siblings receiving more than $600,000 in donations from strangers following their release. Most of the money went into an official trust overseen by the court and hidden from public oversight, Scott said. County officials refused to tell us how much has been spent or on what, but the Turpin we spoke to said those funds are hard to access. Visit our website and let us know who you think is to blame at www.thealarmistpodcast.com and follow us on Instagram at The Alarmist Podcast and on Twitter at AlarmistThe. You can also send us your thoughts via email to thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode was produced and engineered by Clayton Early with fact-checking by Chris Smith and editing by Molly Hockey. Additional writing by Anastasia Kousakis. Thank you to our associate producer and researcher, Alex Paul. The Alarmist is executive produced by Rebecca Delgado-Smith and the Erios Network. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing Joan of Arc.
Erios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.